Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Matt, Stigma Solutions. Today's podcast is with Alex, Alexandria Ott, who goes by Alex of Hustlecraft, which she talks about in this podcast. I mean, these episodes and these conversations are just deeply interesting to me, and I hope that you all find them interesting. We talk about her journey that is very similar to mine, and that she had a very successful early 20s that led to financial prosperity, and she had her own apartment in downtown San Diego, was doing the whole thing. She currently runs two businesses, one based in Chicago and one based in San Diego, and she's running an event here in San Diego called Hustlecraft. A person that is deeply aligned with what we're doing, trying to bring community and actual connection and just humanness to San Diego, and that is what her event is. And she talks about her background and why she's doing it. I talk a little bit about my work and how it relates, and it's just a good, solid conversation. So I hope you all enjoy it, and without further ado, I give you Alex of Hustlecraft.
Cool.
So,
continuing.
Yeah.
So basically, when I owned an agency in Chicago, and we worked for other clients and produced all of their stuff from behind the scenes, and when I moved to San Diego to start our West Coast branch of the business, which was always the plan, I wasn't ready to pull the trigger. It was weird. It was like I got here and I still had, if I'm being honest, a lot of money coming in from Chicago, but I was like ready to start out here, but it was almost like so much money meant so much responsibility. So for the first year of me living in San Diego, I never did anything in San Diego. Like I never engaged in the community because I was like at my house working on stuff for Chicago, and then it was 5 p.m. Oh. And then I had to pick up my son, and then it was family time, go.
Okay, so there's a lot of like, what you lived in Chicago initially?
Yeah, so I'm from San Diego. I'm from Coronado,
okay.
Born and raised. And I was 24 years old, and I was working at an agency in Shelter Island. So I had like grown up here, went to school in LA, came back, worked for a PR firm here. And it was like Groundhog Day. And I had this really cute Volvo. I had this really dope apartment in Bankers Hill. I had the life.
Yeah.
I had a great job right on the water.
How old were you?
24.
Wow.
And I was miserable. And I didn't know it. It wasn't like visibly miserable.
That's my story in a nutshell.
I
hear you.
Depression is a funny thing. Like it definitely doesn't show the same in everyone.
Yeah.
And for me, it was boredom was my depression.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember looking out the window and thinking, oh my God, this is how every day is going to be. Mm-hmm. Every day is going to be like this. I'm going to come and work, probably be hungover, which I always was. Mm-hmm. And
What did your days look like? Sorry if I ask
questions. No, it's fine. Go ahead.
I mean, details.
We did public affairs work at the time there for large construction companies like Turner and these big guys that would win government contracts that were worth so much money, paid for by the tax dollars. Mm-hmm. And we would interpret the ways that these construction companies were using the tax dollars in different communications, like construction update newsletters for the new library, and like very just like weird government law construction work.
Kind of bland.
Super.
Yeah.
And I'm tattooed, and I was never allowed to show them, and I always had to wear like black jackets, and I was like 80 degrees, and like some ribbon cutting with like the mayor, and I was like drenched in sweat, and I was like, this is dumb.
Oh, no.
So I moved there when I was 25, right after my 25th birthday. And a very long story that I'll spare you for the 7 years that I was, 8 years that I was there. But for the first 2 years, I was not working in the industry of PR. I was serving tables. And it was like...
I did the same thing.
It was incredible. Where did you do that?
I did it at there's a wine bar in Forest called Capri Blue.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of...
Oh, because you're not from here.
No, I am. I am here. Forest Ranch is like a little sub-community. I'm from San Diego.
Oh, you are.
Yeah.
But the boredom and the like needing to like do something different.
Well,
I mean,
I was doing a lot of things in tandem. I graduated high school in 2010,
mm-hmm.
and I was the kid that like never got, I barely graduated school. And only reason why I did was because I went to a homeschool program. for my last year of high school, and I recovered a bunch of credits. I was like, okay, I do better on my own.
Yeah.
So I tried college, and I tried a lot of different things, and I served tables for 6 years, but in tandem, I was a professional boxing coach while I was doing that.
Cool.
And then I built a marketing website design company that ended up being top five in San Diego and ended up doing super well.
Wow.
And I had a similar thing. I was 23, I bought myself a brand new Lexus, $500 belts, the shirts, all that, because I didn't grow up with much. It was always about like, who has the money? Like, what are the rich people doing? That's literally what my dad would say to me. So I had the money, but it didn't make me happy.
Yeah.
And it sounds so stupid to have a brand new Lexus when you're 23 and be like, I didn't like it, but but I didn't.
No, I get it. I didn't.
And that's why you said the Bankers Hill apartment thing. I feel you.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, I had like, well, it was hard too because I think I was successful young because I wasn't good at a lot of stuff, but I was really good at work.
Yeah, exactly.
So like I excelled really fast in work, far and above all of my friends. And so I always felt kind of lonely because I never had a partner. I never made time for a partner.
Yeah.
I'm tall and blonde. I would date, mm-hmm. but it was never important to me to have that person because I was so focused on like building the career. And like I had this thing where I was like, I better make 100,000 by the time I'm 30. And then like, you know, our company made like $500,000, but I was like, but I didn't take home 100,000. Uh-huh. So does it count? So basically to speed it up to right now, which I find like fascinating and like wanting to chat through because it's about San Diego and like what San Diego needs is, my first year back after I was there and had the business, I was not really here because I was constantly working in San Diego in my home on Chicago stuff because they pay so well and they're ready to pull the trigger at all times and it's cash on the table and they have one conversation, they look you in the eye, they trust you, they pay you, they sign with you, and that's it.
Wow.
If you fuck them, it's another story.
Right, that's East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here it's like, it's just been such a different experience and I need to learn to like not talk shit because like I have to just adjust.
Yes.
But it's very like, let me think about it. I'll get back to you. I recently heard from someone, we won't drag our feet this time because I had talked to him in like 5 different meetings, which I would never do with anybody else. And then I sent him the contract, nothing, ghosted. Haven't heard from him, have followed up like 3 or 4 times.
This is interesting because I've had a similar experience of like client is all for it. And then you send the estimate, you send the contract, you send the agreement, and then it's like, it's such a weird interaction.
I actually just had a meeting with somebody this week that was like, yeah. And I said, so this happens all the time. And I just laid it out. I said, so I'm super excited, you're excited to work with me. This happens all the time where we're on the same page. I know your vibe. I know your brand. I know what you guys need. I can do it. I do it well. I can do it in my sleep.
Right.
I send you the proposal. It has every detail. And then you see the sticker shock.
Yep.
And I said, think about, this is all stuff you can do. Like it's different if you're doing like some deep kind of digital marketing stuff that like really people can't do. But what I do, people can do.
Right.
You know, I am pretty much a project manager of communications, but I do it constantly, insistently. Mm-hmm. And so things like e-newsletters and social media and like, you know, neighborhood outreach and, you know, just ways of just getting people in the door for small businesses, anyone can do.
But the devil's in the details.
And the time.
Yes.
So I said to them, I said, think about how many times it was a beauty place, which did lashes and waxing. And I said, think about how many lashes and waxes you can do and how much money you can make in the time that it would take you to build your own website and the time that it would take you to. And that sounds so obvious. And I don't feel like in Chicago I would ever even need to say that.
Right.
Because a restaurateur is going to build a restaurant and not try to do my job. Mm-hmm. And a lash girl that does, I can't do lashes, mm-hmm. so why would she try to do my job?
Right.
And so that's how I sold it. I just was like, because I was so sick of not hearing, and I don't even know if I've sold it, you know, I don't know, but I don't know, there's something so interesting about like the drag in the feet in San Diego.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what we run into is the same thing of like, this is an investment, and a lot of our prices are, so I have this theory, and a lot of the stuff that I put on social media is about how the market's inflated, and we're in a major bubble right now, and the businesses are overpaying significantly for digital marketing, video production, photography, like we're overpaying significantly. So a lot of our prices are pretty legit, like they're really affordable. And people, I think a lot of people are playing defense out here. I think that you're, in a place where you're trying to prevent loss rather than you're trying to like get out ahead of it. And hiring somebody like you would be getting it out ahead of it,
yeah,
and letting somebody grow this thing for you, so that when I have conversations, I mean, when I consult for founders or executive directors, I tell them that your job is to do the work that only you can do.
Yes.
That is specifically your job.
Yes.
And if you're doing anything else, we need to take care of that, because you become the bottleneck. It was my problem for a long time.
Interesting.
I was of the same affect where I was like, I'm the workhorse. I can get it. I'm going to make this money. One, I was using it as therapy for all the problems that I had in my life, where it was like, any pain that came up, I can just work. Mm. It'll be okay. And that works in the short term, but in the long term, you never deal with anything. And two, I became the chokehold. I wasn't training anybody else. I wasn't systematizing anything. I wasn't outsourcing anything. It was just like, I had to do it all.
Same.
And it was
kind of a
massive bottleneck for me.
Yeah.
And since then, like, I built a team. Like, Stigma has 5 people on it now. Me and Kelly run it together. And I do like the upfront stuff, and she does the behind the scenes stuff. But we're both kind of the face of it. And I cannot tell you how much having a team and having people to lean on and just be with
has changed.
How
do you think you really built a team? Because I tried to build a team, and what I realized is that's my weakness.
Really?
I cannot build a team, and I hate managing a team.
Interesting.
And so I had a team out in Chicago, and bless their souls, but like it was better almost, right now I have freelancers that give me a few hours,
yeah,
like I've totally downsized,
yeah,
to then rebuild,
right,
based on many mistakes and just adjustments that were needed for my life. I shouldn't say mistakes. And I just couldn't manage and oversee. And right now I have like 4 experts,
mm-hmm,
who do really good stuff, and they just produce and give and produce and give,
yeah,
and nobody's ever asking me like, what should I do for this?
Yeah.
And I don't work well with that, and I didn't know that until I had a team of like 4 amazing young women,
yeah,
who I had like taught and trained through internship program up until, and they're very autonomous, but ultimately there was no true independence.
Yeah. And I think that it's actually,
or initiative.
It's actually super rare for people to be independent and take initiative. That there are a lot of people that need permission or need guidance or leadership to be like, hey, it's okay. Or, and this was something that's really difficult for me, is to show them specifically and exactly what you need them to do all the time. Because in the short term, it feels like a loss.
Yeah.
It feels like, oh, I have to, I'll just take care of it. For me, it was like zooming out and seeing how much in the long run, if we could get these people set up and get them to understand what they need to do, how much it would exponentially pay off in the future for,
mm-hmm,
me, as opposed to like taking care of in the short term, because I knew I was going to burn out. Like, I was working 6 a.m. to 12 a.m. every day. I'd wake up at 6, I would like journal and read and get my hour out in the morning, start hitting client stuff, and just go through the day, get my workout in, get home at 9 p.m. or something like that, and go right back to it. Like,
wow.
It was.
It's been a long time since I've worked those long of hours.
It's unnecessary.
I did it for the first year of the business.
And we take pride in it, where we're like, 18-hour days, I'm hustling. It's like,
I do think it does break you in, though. I do think that it makes you appreciate when you get to leave at 3 for me to pick up my son and go play in a park.
Sure.
Because like that was never something that could have even happened in Chicago, right? So
right.
It was like, I think I put in the work that was necessary to build the groundwork to be able to slowly pull back the hours, because
yeah,
I'm now working smarter within that time, or knowing how to outsource.
Yeah, no, that's a good way. It's like you've become more seasoned,
mm-hmm,
so you know when you need to put in those hours and when you don't. You're,
yes,
not just, because for me it was like I was reacting to everything. Right.
Right.
It's like, I have to make something happen.
No, I mean,
nothing's gonna work.
Everyone's like, I'm this totally.
Yeah.
Where like how much stuff rolls off my back now is like laughable, because I would be like, I remember one time, this is such a silly example, but I was like with my girlfriends at their house, and it was like I had first year of business, again feeling so alone because nobody understood what it was like to like own and run a team or a business. And I decided to smoke some pot with them, which was like, you know, a common thing that people do.
Yeah.
But I hadn't in so long because I was afraid that when I would get high, I would get a phone call.
Yeah, I understand.
And I did. I smoked pot and immediately got a call from my biggest client. There was no way I wasn't going to pick it up. And nowadays, I'd be like, slip, text.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
And I was like, and he was like, da-da-da, something just happened. And I was like, hi. And I was like, oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. And it was just like, it's a dumb example of like bringing up pot. But the whole idea is that like, there was no boundaries. There was like pure, like, I think I said in a talk recently that I was on that, like, I had never had an anxiety attack until I owned my own business. Because it's just like stack, 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 stack. Everything is stacked. And you're just like,
yeah, you
completely
are
out of control. There's no book for it. And even the books, I don't know. I just feel like I'm a very complex creature, right? Like, I'm like a woman, and I'm this, and I'm that. And so I read these books, and I'm like, I get it. And I really do appreciate anybody that takes the time to write a book about business, and I probably should read more. But I really love navigating my own waters. Like, yes. I really do think that there isn't just a book for me. You know, I really do feel like I go a lot on, like, emotion and gut and... But I don't think I'm doing it like perfectly or like the way it should be.
Probably. I released a video at the end of last year, like a little video series, and the literal title was I Know Nothing. because it was like, I know nothing. And it was one of those things that was so cliche because we were shooting content for my nonprofit and we were at a boxing gym up in Santa Ana that had been closed down for us. I was sitting in the middle of the boxing ring. There were lights set up, there were cameras. I had like six people there. Everybody was supporting me. And I was like, I want to shoot something real quick. And nobody knew what I was going to say. And I sat there and I was like, I know nothing. I have no idea why these people are in this room. It humbles me, but I don't think anybody knows anything either. I think the business that we're in, by the time you have something figured out, by tomorrow it's changed.
Mm.
So to read a book, it's like you can read a concept and there are things that apply, like values that apply, but tactically it's hard to nail anything down.
Right.
Nobody knows how to do anything.
Right.
We are all just doing our best.
But what we can do is know ourselves.
Yes.
And that's where I invest my time in reading.
Yes.
Is about knowing myself.
Yes.
I was just waiting for somebody in a meeting, and I hate waiting for people in meetings. I know that I canceled on you, but like waiting for people, especially when you know that they're in the space.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I know this, she was there.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you, you know,
this
whatever.
Isn't the doctor.
This is also the East Coast mentality.
Yeah.
And she had a Deepak Chopra book, and I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. Like, mm-hmm. what does this guy talk about? Like, mm-hmm. I know of him. And I read about like this, like seven angles of practicality and how to know thyself and how to differentiate ego. And I like couldn't put the book down. And when she walked in, I was like, I don't want to even meet with her. I just want to read this book. It's so good.
Yeah.
But I am deeply spiritual, deeply, deeply invested in like my mental health and my growth and my spiritual health and grounding. And I don't really work out and I smoke cigarettes, but I go to so much yoga. Like, I'm just like a weird conundrum of like deeply spiritual, love my cocktails, drink so much coffee, drink a ton of water, eat mostly fruit. And you know, that's just what works for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really important.
That exactly. That's what I was going to say. Is mm-hmm. That's the important piece. I've had a lot of people reach out to me lately where they're like, you're always creating, you're always working. And it was almost like I was having the opposite effect with my content, because my stuff is like, I want people to see, like, I know I have very ambitious and lofty goals, and I want people to see me either win or fail, but mm-hmm. they're going to see the process. That's why it's like the transparency and the camera and like, this is what it actually looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But people were comparing themselves. And I'm like, no. The important part is that it works for me
mm-hmm.
because it works for me. That's
It's so a simple, big differentiation. But it's actually a very elevated thought, which is kind of bizarre, but that like, that's just what works for you.
Yeah, this is what I love. This is what I do. This is what I do. Like, most of the years of my life, when I was doing what I love, everybody told me I was going to be a failure and that I wasn't enough and I should go back to school and I was fucking up my life. And I just had this like deep knowledge that I needed to do me.
Mm-hmm.
And like now it's like quote unquote paying off.
Right.
So people are like, oh my God, we need to do what he does. I'm like, no. You need to do what you want to do.
There's also layers to that, I think, within my career, because I feel like the whole building of Chrome City as an agency was a fuck you, but if I break it down, it was to nobody. Like old high school bullies that could see, like, we're very much alike.
Yes, we are.
But like, you know, it was awesome, but then I remember, just like you and just like the whole Bankers Hill apartment thing, same thing. We had the neon sign with my logo and we had this dope loft office and I had girls working for me and there was like coffee and I was like, oh my God, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't do it for me anymore. Yes. And that was part of coming back here too.
Yes, and that's the thing that scares me. And I wanna like rewind this because I don't think anybody even knows who you are, what you do, so we should do an introduction.
Oh, sure.
But that's the thing that scares me, is that when we don't take the time, I should reel it back. a lot of the stuff that I teach for my foundation is a lot of the stuff that I use in my personal life. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that I ask is, what makes you happy? And I remember the first time I taught it, it was a soft open event where I had a bunch of people in the room and we were talking about these different boundaries and these different like self-awareness pieces. And I said, what makes you happy? And I was in a room full of adults and people were saying things like the beach and chocolate and I love Starbucks. I'm like, no, but really, like, what makes you happy? Because if you don't decide on what makes you happy and what you want to be, somebody or something else will. You're going to find something. Mm-hmm. And you and I both know people that have found things that are terrible that they can't avoid because that's who they are. Mm-hmm. Or that's what makes them happy. And it's drugs or it's alcohol or it's money or maybe it's something good. But that's the place that I got to where I was told my whole life that if I had certain things and lived a certain life that I would be happy. Mm. And one of two things happens. Either when you're told that, you get there and you look back down and you go, I have all the things that I'm supposed to have. Why am I not happy?
Yeah.
There must be something wrong with me. Mm. That's one. And then two is you spend your entire life looking up the hill saying, I'd be happy if I was up there.
Yeah, which it's like I'm self-aware enough to know that, but I don't know. I think right now, so getting to know yourself and what makes you happy is interesting because I had the agency and it was everything I ever wanted, and I had everyone being like, you're killing it, yeah. And all of that, you know, same thing. And I was, but I mean, it was like so hard to do. And it was that, you know, I always tell people when I'm also speaking that like the bigger the dream, which I do this because it's like a hot air balloon, mm-hmm. the bigger the weight at the bottom to hold the dream down. Because like you have to have a foundation to hold such a big and lofty dream, the responsibility becomes that much heavier at the bottom. So there's never a time in my life since I was 28 and started my own business that I felt free.
Yes.
Ever.
Yes.
I mean, maybe making love, to be totally real.
Yeah.
But like, that's it. And it's because there's this weight at the bottom that's holding up the dream of the business, the baby, the mm-hmm. house, the money, everything that gets heavier and heavier as my dreams get bigger. And so while I keep building this beautiful big thing that keeps getting bigger, I have to also work on the heaviness of the weight at the bottom and start to clear shit out that doesn't need to be there so that this isn't like gonna crush me, yes. You know? But I think that I've just, in coming back to owning the agency in Chicago, coming to San Diego, to wanting to start the agency out here, only to look around and see like that there was already women doing that. And mm-hmm. like everyone seemed pretty well taken care of. And I was like, you know, I'm not 25 and like angry and gritty and I'm gonna like crush everyone. And that's how I felt when I started my agency. I was like, fuck everyone, I'm gonna do it all. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I was like something to be talked about. And I was like this figure. I was this California girl that nobody had seen. And I built this thing. And I came back and I was like, you know, my heart's changed. You know, I have that baby like totally softened this harsh heart that I had to work 24/7. And and I was like, I don't really want to compete with those three lovely women that probably have kids that are running their agencies. I don't want to go after their business because that's what it is. And I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited. And I kept kind of trying to get some clients here and there. It would always fall through. The universe was not trying to have me do that. Kept trying to get clients out in Chicago, close the business down a little bit out there. And now I'm working on just having my own experiences that I'm building that came out of just listening to me.
Yes.
And that is really scary. And the first one wasn't like fantastic. It was fantastic in content. The people that were there that were speaking on things that are important to me. And the feedback that I've gotten was that there wasn't enough people, but that the people that were there were really good people.
Yes.
And even if like, I think maybe like 70 people came all throughout the day, they were all really dope. Like everyone was like, you know, big content creators, like the director of marketing for all of Fashion Valley Mall was there. Just like really dope movers and shakers who all were like, keep doing it.
Yeah.
But in my eyes, I was like, failure. Like, you know, like I didn't like it. I didn't, if I'm being honest, I've never told anybody that, but I didn't really like Hustlecraft. Like I was just like, it was like I had to just pull the trigger and try it to then see how to like tweak it.
Yes.
So this next one is gonna be bonkers bananas, in my opinion, I think.
I agree. And I think that the alternative is not a win. I think that having a ton of not so great people there, like people who are just there to take and just people who don't wanna engage or mm-hmm. aren't gonna contribute, I think
it's my favorite new saying.
What is it?
People that are there to feed the soil versus people that are there to take the fruit. You want people there that are feed to soil.
That's right.
That's my favorite new saying right now.
That wraps up everything I was just going to say. having a ton of those kind of people, yeah, as opposed to having what you had, I don't think you'd want the alternative.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Or the alternative of not following my intuition to go and just try to do this.
Yes.
In a city where I feel comfortable doing it because I'm from here, mm-hmm, but also like being judged to be like, oh, Miss Thing, because I think I'm Miss Thing, and I'm coming back from Chicago being like the it thing, mm-hmm, and then coming back and being like, I'm going to try this little like thing that I want to do, and like, let's just like see what happens. Yeah. And it was like weird. I've never been like that, I think, vulnerable with like my work, but you know, on every panel there was someone of color, on every panel there was someone who was queer or like represented in that way, and I'm proud of that, you know? And I think that people are like wanting that, and that all comes to like this whole digital, we're lonelier than we've ever been, but
truth,
we feel more connected, and our content is talking about it now, which is hilarious because the content is also what's like bringing us together but also pulling us apart, and this whole weird dichotomy. And I'm 33, so almost 34, so I'm like just, I'm definitely old enough where like my life really hasn't been in front of the screen, but my business has thrived with the screen, and
for sure.
So I think I'm at like a weird age group of that. But I think that like why I think Hustle Craft is interesting, and obviously I'm here to talk to you about my business and not sound too pluggy.
No, plug it. Like I think this is a good point for you to like say your name, say who you are, what you're currently working on, just because this has been a really interesting conversation up to this point, but if anybody's listening, I don't know if they would know what we're talking about. So please kind of set the stage, please.
My name is Alexandria Ott. I go by Alex. For people who know me, that's how I know the difference. If they're like, hey, Alexandria, I'm like, that's a business thing. If they're like, Alex, I'm like, homie, what's up? And I am the founder and CEO of Chrome City Creative, a creative agency with offices in San Diego and Chicago, and the founder of Hustle Craft and the co-founder of the Blank Table Dinner series.
Beautiful. What do each of those are? So you have three businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I love it, because people always tell me, I teach one period a day. I teach entrepreneurship at a continuation school, Abraxas High School in Poway.
Cool.
I built their entrepreneurship program. That's where I just came from.
Rad.
And they're a bunch of awesome kids that are a continuation school.
Is it like tough kids?
Yeah. Dude.
A continuation school is
a school where kids who usually have terrible things that are going on at home or are having difficulty in a mainstream school, they go to a continuation school that's usually much smaller. Our school, we have like 170 kids on our diploma side, which is in comparison to the mainstream school in the districts have like 2,000 to 3,000. So we're much smaller.
So interesting.
There's much more counseling support. It's much more emotional health. The teachers, all the teachers and the kids go by each other by first name. They don't call me Mr. Iski. They call me Matt. Like, it's super personal. It's just a really dope school. I teach there once
a... What a blessing for those kids,
thank you,
too.
Thank you. Yeah, we're getting the founder of UGGs to come and talk to the school in April.
Right.
Yeah, there's some real support. Like,
oh, that's great.
It's good shit. I do that one period a day, and then I run Stigma Full Time, which is our media production company and social media management marketing firm. And then I have a foundation called the Your Truth Foundation, mm-hmm, that provides preventative education around violence and trafficking of women and children. So I'm also in a lot of arenas. And I think it's amazing that you are also, mm-hmm, because people are always trying to put me in a box and be like, how do you do this and that? It's like, you can do a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an example of that. So please tell me what each of the three things does.
Mm-hmm. Chrome City in Chicago offers public relations, marketing, graphic design. It's kind of a whole creative agency.
Yeah, I'm in the
started
same.
As a PR firm, and then quickly realized that as print magazines were shutting down and writers, that we had like 50 friends in the press, and now there's like 12 if you're lucky, that we really shifted to content creation and social marketing. We worked a lot with restaurants and a lot with artists. So currently our Chicago clients are a restaurant called Flora Fauna, mm-hmm, owned by a husband and wife. I love them so much, and their food is incredible, and everything about them is great. And then I'm opening an exhibit in Chicago called Womanish. I have been doing all of their pre-opening programming, so a lot of my best work right now for who I am today and my knowledge is to help people disseminate their message around their brand by creating experiences around it, leading up to it, in it,
yeah,
around it,
yeah, yeah,
partnerships. Because I think what happens is people are so good at what they do that they don't know how to tell their story, which is so much of what we do. So I've been curating these panels on different issues. So it's called Womanish, but it's about the experience and perspective of being a woman with an X, woman, W-O-M-X-N. For anybody that doesn't live in like a big city or a progressive city, woman with an X is any experience of female, like any feminine experience, right? So like you can have a feminine experience of your own, whether you're gay, straight, it doesn't matter. I think we always try to put people in boxes of like man, woman, black, white, gay, straight. And it's like there's such a complex, you know. So we're working on this exhibit. It's a 5-story exhibit in downtown, and each room has a different artist that has taken over to showcase things like being censored. So there's a room called Censored-ish, and it's like a huge, crazy exhibit about the experience of females being censored. There's one called Childish, and she has like these huge Barbie Jeeps from like our childhood being built out, and it's crazy. It's just like a big art exhibition. So I'm doing a lot of programming around that by moderating panels. We've had Famish, which was about the family dynamics of being a woman, what that meant as a young girl, and what that means today. We had Stylish, how style plays a part in how we feel about ourselves and how like self-expression is important as a woman. And then we had, what was this last one that we had? Selfish. And I really wanted that one to be less about self-care because I'm kind of sick of like girls talking about that. And again, it's layers. It's kind of like religion, to be real. Like when you're woke, it's just different layers. So like I'll use religion as an example, or church. Like certain churches give you certain, if you're really of faith, depths for your faith, you know? So you can go to one church and it's great. It's right on the surface. It's easy to consume. And as you go deeper, you need more. Mm-hmm. And same with being woke and your experiences in culture. It's the same. They're literally very similar. Just, I won't even talk about religion, but that's my example of depth, right? Yes. So like this conversation in San Diego of what we talk about in Chicago during Womanish, I don't even know what people would do. Like, it's so deep. And it was less about self-care and surface-level shit, and it was more about what happens around you when you decide to take care of yourself.
Yes.
And the toxicity and the toxic people.
For sure.
And the people that fall off and the people that resent you. And it was fucking crazy. It was very deep. We had, like, a doctor and a, you know, mental health expert, a spiritual, like, witch, who's amazing, and myself. So
Chrome City produces that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Chrome City produces that. That's what we do in Chicago.
That's why I'm here.
Thank you. Sorry. And then here, instead of Chrome City doing that kind of stuff, we are the producers of Hustlecraft and The Blank Table.
Gotcha.
The Blank Table is a bi-monthly dining pop-up series that I do with my best friend from middle school, who is a renowned chef. His name is Fred Keller.
Right.
And we do pop-up dinners every 2 months. You buy a ticket. You don't know where it's going to be. You get a text the day of. Mm-hmm. And they're typically in spaces that you would not normally dine. So we've done it in like a motorcycle garage, on a dock in the middle of nowhere, in an old skateboard factory. And I guess there's some others in San Diego, but they're definitely nothing like this. We're not super meat heavy. We're more seafood, plant-based. Okay. It's not a bunch of dudes, because I know another one that's really awesome, but it's like mostly bros that like love each other and a certain, well, I won't even go into it because people will know who it is. So anyways, it's great.
Cool.
And then Hustlecraft is the celebration of the craft of a modern day hustler in a panel series and marketplace setting.
That's well phrased.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. Why?
I don't see San Diego coming together in the ways that I know they so deeply desire.
Truth.
I know that people want community. I know
they
that
need
people
it.
They need it.
Yes.
You know, that's, I hate to go back to the church for some reason this is happening, but like the reason people go to church is because there's community. Mm-hmm. And like, how else do you really find that? Like, you know, going to an AA meeting, you can find more community than you can just in life, right?
Truth.
Like, meet up, I guess. Yeah, I mean,
this is something that's super interesting too, because it's like high school and college, you have your community, your friends, you're spending time together, and then everybody kind of goes and we branch out into our little like tribe-like families.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people that you work with, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
And it's
unless you live in a cold city, I'm telling you.
Really? Because I've only ever lived on the West Coast.
Oh, so cold cities, we all get together and we, it's like, it's tribal.
That's cool.
It's so cold, and it doesn't matter if it's a dive bar or an art show, we're there. And mostly metropolitan, obviously. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm sure in the middle of, like, Montana, that's not the case.
Right.
But I think what happens when it's nice out is there's all the time, is there so many options to go skateboard, bike ride, walk, surf, swim, think, hike, whatever you want to do, bar, that we don't do it together. Whereas when it's freezing fucking cold, you're either going to go to a, you're going inside.
Yes.
You're going to go to a restaurant, you're going to go to a bar, you're going to go to a house party, you're going to go to an art show. Where else are you going to go?
Yeah. That makes
so
sense.
People rally around each other and people like really support one another. And I've heard so many no's here. That's been a little bit jolting in there. Like, I didn't hear any no's. Everyone was like, I'll help you. Yeah, I'll shoot that. Like, yeah, we can collab. Like, yeah, I'll be there. It's always like a yes to showing up because it's so cold outside that like the idea of bonding with somebody inside a really dope loft studio space that you're going to do all day just because I bought you lunch. And this goes into like undervaluing, valuing artists and like knowing your value and like stating your worth. I kind of hate that.
Okay.
Because it's like, I also think that like, yes, I know my value and I can get my money from certain people in that way for sure. But also if someone's like, hey, like I'll buy you lunch, but would you like help me produce this shoot? I would say yes.
For
sure. If it felt good to me.
For sure.
And I think people, millennials or like younger millennials are trying so hard to be rigid about their self-worth that they're saying no to like really great experiences to connect with other people.
Yes.
And that's why I'm afraid to say that like, it's going to be $100 to come to Hustlecraft this time.
Yes.
Because we're like taking care of people and there's art and there's music and there's food and there's design and there's like, it's worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
But does San Diego really, can they put their money where their heart is?
Yeah.
It's not where their mouth is because they're not even saying they want it, but I know they want it.
Well, it's interesting too because I think you're also, I am pretty much a no for networking events because
hate
of the
them.
Way that they look.
Hate them.
Yeah,
hate them.
And I think that you're doing something different, but you're still up against the picture that people have.
Sure. But that's where content comes in.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like that's why I keep thinking about like what content can we create for Hustlecraft that people are like, oh fuck, okay, I can fuck with that.
Yeah.
You know, like not your mama's networking event or whatever, like something.
This is
dumb.
What you think it's gonna be, and this is what it actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For
and
sure.
And I found somebody who I think is really special as an intern that we have that vision where I'm like, yo, like let's do a video on a bunch of like dreary ass gray suited hello my name is you know
it.
Blah blah
yeah,
blah
here's my business
and,
card
yeah
yeah
and then show like you know some you know punk queer black like I just like want it to be weird and like different and like
yeah.
everyone together and get it put it in people's faces
yeah.
Because I think that one thing that makes Chrome City as a whole brand, which is the umbrella under all the above all the others, is that we create experiences that make people feel really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're there, they're so uncomfortable that they end up bonding with somebody who's there who's kind of uncomfortable as well and developing much deeper connections.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's comfortable to be at a dumb bar downtown in East Village and be like, da-da-da, here's my vodka soda, what's your name? Oh, cool, banking? Like, I cannot. I'm right there with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's usually no.
Cannot. And, you know, I'm definitely, like, my partner, my boyfriend, he just went to a networking event in East Village and he wore some crazy suit. He's just he will make suits. He's a weirdo. And he's like, I mean, I don't think people knew what to do with me when
mm-hmm.
I was there because
mm-hmm.
everyone was in like a gray or mm-hmm. navy blue suit and he was in some floral number and he was wearing Birkenstocks. And he said, you know, that's the tough part about us deciding whether or not to go to LA or not. Because I think sometimes with he and I, because we're so much alike, people don't know what to do with us.
I feel you.
Because
it's very similar for me. I'm usually the youngest one in the room.
Yeah.
I'm usually the only one with tattoos. I'm usually the only one that doesn't have a suit on. It's like, who is this guy? I mean, And it didn't feel that way at Hustlecraft because I went to the first one.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel that way. There were a ton of people there that I knew.
Oh.
They were all like dope individuals that are doing things that are similar, and it was just a cool crowd. Like I
cool.
went honestly when I went,
really
I was
happy to hear
Kelly
that.
Told me about it because you invited her, and she was like, "Hey, do you want to go?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll bring one of the other guys on the team. We'll bring a camera, whatever." And I mean, I know Kristen from Saffron Stage; she was there.
Yeah,
Alyssa Mapia was there. Brooke Hancock was there. Like I know,
those are good.
I know, it was just like, oh, this isn't super awkward because I'm by nature the shy kid.
Yeah.
Nobody ever knows it when I'm talking or running a podcast or whatever, but cold introductions for me, for whatever the reason, are still like terrifying.
Well, I went to Kristen's event last night and I had anxiety and I had to leave because I like didn't know people and we were in a small room and everyone was waiting for like a something to happen and I was like, I have to go.
Yeah.
So I feel you. Like I'm super social. I'm actually better talking to like 1,000 and then when it comes to like 8 that I don't know, I'm like, one-on-one I'm fine, yes. But like 8,
yes.
If nobody's saying like what's up, I am, I'm just like, that's so awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that way at your first event. So it'll be amazing to see what you do with the second one.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I had somebody reach out to me in PR, which is how this whole thing has come so full circle. And she's like, I want to get my client to speak at Hustlecraft. And I was like, great. And so I said, I'm still working out details, blah, blah, blah. I'll get back to you. And she, this woman, that's her client. And I'm not going to say who it is because we've confirmed her as a speaker and we'll be announcing it soon. When I lived in Chicago and I was looking at San Diego brands, there was like 5 people that I was like, I need to know them. Saffron and Sage and Kristen being absolutely on the top of that list. Mm-hmm. And this girl also being at the top of this list and creating an amazing brand that's based in North Park, hint, hint. There's so many businesses there. But I thought it was interesting because she said to me, and this is like so, so affirming this week, while it's been a tough week in Mercury's in retrograde, she said, you know, as a publicist in San Diego, we have very few spaces and outlets for our clients to be written about because slowly but surely so much has changed with the magazines and, you know, we're all shifting. And for anybody that doesn't know PR, like there used to be like 20 different outlets and 20 writers within each outlet. And so you could have like a cool culture piece and then a cool art piece and then a cool food piece all about the same client.
Yeah.
And you could maneuver it and it was all about storytelling. And like that's gone. Like that's just not how it is.
A whole medium has pretty much died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's very close to, and bless the souls of the people that are sticking with it and getting severely underpaid. I mean, severely.
Yeah.
But she said, this is so cool because this is totally up her alley. She's kind of badass. She's more edgy. So for me to find something like that in San Diego for her is impossible almost. And she said, so this is so great. And it generates PR. So once we announce her as like the moderator of the only 2 panels that we're going to have, because we're also going to be doing a keynote, a fireside, and then some workshops with General Assembly and kind of breaking it up.
Dope.
She can go and get this person on every TV show, on everything, and it's a great PR angle to say, here's this person that you know about, but she's actually leading the discussion at Hustlecraft. And she's like, so what you've actually done for me is built an opportunity for PR. And I was like, that's all I wanted.
Boom.
I don't want to do that job anymore. I don't enjoy it anymore, but I want to build stuff based on my experience to give to publicists. So we sent an email out to every publicist in the city of San Diego that I know and was like, nominate your people. So that way we're generating interest from the PR people to be like, here's an opportunity to showcase them. And in a way that's raw, right?
Yeah,
so
important.
If they had like media come and interview them about their new restaurant, they'd be like, yes, this is my new restaurant and this is our menu. But if you see them up on the stage talking to Hustlecraft and somebody's moderating being like, when did you think you were gonna lose it all?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, last week.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of shit that the media needs to see too.
That's exactly what I believe in that so much, like so much. Where it's like our failures and our shortcomings and our doubts and like all of the things, like we need to be more transparent about it for a lot of reasons. But one of the primary reasons for me is that there's a lot of people watching and the people watching are mirroring and they're taking example. Like you're the role model for somebody. And if all you present is the good stuff, then the person that wants to be like you thinks that they're not good enough. Mm. And it's not true because, I mean, I'm lucky that I know a lot of like famous people that are in different lights and it's like they're all just people.
Mm-hmm.
They all do the same thing. Like we all just want to talk to each other. We all need friends. Mm-hmm. We all doubt ourselves. Like it's all the same angle. And if you're creating that on a panel that's going to be on mainstream media, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's fascinating how much. I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But just like how America like built itself up, you know. To want everything to look a certain way.
Well, and Instagram, like social media as a whole fueled it because it got more likes for you to post something that was happy and people saw that, but it wasn't intentional, but it became so unbalanced so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I do a post once a week of our failure of the week.
Cool.
Like once a week, I'm like, we bought like whatever the thing was. Like we bought a bunch of stickers and we were gonna have our contact information on the back of them. And we got this stamp, but the sticker had a non-porous backing on it. So we spent $100, $200 on stickers and we stamped them and then the ink just smeared everywhere. And rather than hiding it, I literally took a picture of the smeared ink and I was like, failure of the week. We spent this money, is basically wasted. That's
wow.
it.
Failure of the week.
Everybody has them.
Yeah.
Everybody has them. I know you.
That's hard to do, though. I mean, it's like cute and quirky and funny with a sticker, but like you start going a little bit deeper. Oh, like I've made a lot of mistakes.
Absolutely. We all have.
Yeah, I know.
But people are gonna try more. I mean, I've dropped clients. I've missed meetings. I've said the wrong thing. Called somebody. I called you the wrong name.
Oh yeah, you called me Brooke.
Like, it's.
Hey Brooke. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I thought you were Brooke. Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, so we're even then.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's funny.
I want to, I'm curious because there's a lot of details to what you do.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, what does it look like? Like the tactical, like, I hate to say sales, but the outreach and contact stuff, like what does that look like for you? How do you get general interest? Because a lot of people, I think, build something, like if somebody's listening to this and they want to be in the game, but they're not in the game yet. We spend a lot of time focusing on the details of like the brand has to be perfect and the website and the graphics and like everything has to be just so.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's just a rationalization for you to do something because you're scared to do the stuff you're scared to do. And most of the time for people that's actually putting it out there and actually asking somebody like, do you want to be my client?
Mm.
Do you want to buy my thing? Like, what does that process look like for you?
So I think your question was a few different things, right? Like, how do I package it? Meaning what I do right now, because it's so complex, is currently packaged into three parts.
Sure.
Cultural programming, which I do for myself with those two businesses, and then I can also sell into. So that could be sold to like, you know, a developer who's opening a brand new really dope high rise, and instead of having a dumb meat and cheese board and like a DJ, they can have like curatorial experiences, which I can do, content creation.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be outsourced to photo, video, and development of mostly like your story being told through social channels, and then consulting.
Mm-hmm.
We just decided it's just consulting because of my vast experience working with restaurants and working with other businesses about storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we're packaging it. That's one part. And then the other part is like, stepping out and selling.
Yeah, like the micro outreach. Like when you pick up your phone in the morning, what do you do to make contact with somebody? New clients, a client that was interested but you never secured. Like what does that look like for you?
I'm relentless. And I just decide that I will reach out to somebody as it feels right, but in a variety of mediums until they're literally like, stop fucking contacting me.
Wow.
Or unless it doesn't feel right to me. The girl that works with me in LA, who's my right-hand girl, her name's Kira, and we had a proposal out to this person who said that they weren't going to drag their feet, and then I just haven't heard from it. It's so rude. And I'm not even emotional about it. It's just fucking rude. And I said, you know, should I reach out again with more detail on X, Y, and Z? Maybe they didn't have enough info. And that was my desperation speaking. And she said, if it's this hard to just get a hold of them to hear if they're even interested, imagine working with them.
Fair.
So I will never reach out to him. The way she said it, it was like I felt it in my gut. And I was like, fuck it. I'm never going to reach out to him again.
Mm-hmm.
I've reached out to him 3 times post like contract sent. I'm not going to reach out to him again. So I like to mix it up. I like to mix it up with who I reach out to, how I reach out to them. Like if I find a business card in a weird old purse and I'm like, I liked that person, I'll email them right away.
Cool.
Be like, hey dude, I just found your card. Like, let's go get coffee. I'm a big let's go get coffee person.
Yeah, me too.
I like to suss people out. I like to hear their story. I like to vibe. And then I usually will understand what they need a lot more than making it like so formal.
Mm-hmm.
I have no agenda though. Like I definitely, which is maybe to my detriment because we're not like thriving financially right now, but I'm like in a vibe right now where I focus so much on the money for so long because I had a staff that I had to pay that right now I've like relieved myself of that stress and I'm gonna live in it and enjoy the natural nature of like humans coming into my life, which is so annoying to say to like entrepreneurs who are like, how do I get my start? And I'm like, just live in it and
feel it. Yeah.
But I am in a place where there's enough money coming in with like little pockets of little old projects that I've built where I'm really like just, if I see someone on Instagram that I forgot that I talked to at an event like 3 months ago, we were gonna get together, I DM them and I'm like, coffee next week, and I throw out a date. You know, like, I'm very much like trying to get in front of people when and where I see fit, but I'm not like, okay, so who am I gonna reach out to today?
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's important because a lot of people, I mean, we think that we're demanding more attention than we are. Mm. And when you say you're hammering people, like, you probably don't get a response, or even like they don't even see your message till like the fifth or sixth attempt on a different medium.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of people, and me including, like just starting out, I would send one email, I didn't get a response, and I'm like, oh, I guess they don't want to work with me.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
No.
It's a learning process.
Yeah, we have like spreadsheets of did you contact them 8 times. Yeah. So anytime we reach out to someone, we have to check the boxes of our spreadsheets 8 times.
Same platform?
No, always different. It could be whatever you want. I mean, it's usually in the sales series that we've developed, which I'm not really selling a lot right now. It is intro email, follow up. By the third one, we're CCing somebody else on the team so that it looks like we're trying to get more people in on the conversation, and it makes them actually feel really awkward to not respond when there's two people on it.
Yeah.
So it's, first one is intro. Second one is an info packet that we've developed. Third is CCing someone on our team. Fourth is if I can find to show up, I'll show up. Because we have restaurants and bars, so it's like if you haven't gone into that restaurant,
just walk in.
Yeah, walk in, ask for them, leave a card. Fifth one is I popped in and left a card, hope you got it. And then after that, it's up to your psycho self what the fuck you want to do.
Has this something that's just come natural to you? Like to just be able to do that? Because I think it makes a lot of people super anxious.
It's not natural to me. It was developed first by my brother. He came and worked for me, and he came from a corporate recruiter background where like you just have to do that.
Yeah.
So he's the one that set up the whiteboards and the spreadsheets and the like first, second, third. And then we had a wonderful young lady named Kira who was our intern under me and my brother. And she loved interning for us, but she really wanted to have experience in a more corporate job. So he got her a job at the place that he did that work for, Northwestern Mutual, I think it's called. She worked for them, and then she ended up having other jobs. And long story short, she came back to me, and now she works for me. And so she's implemented the sales process. She also sold for Equinox in LA.
Gotcha.
So she's like full sales girl.
Yeah.
But she's not so much in the face-to-face. Like she's like, I'd rather set up your systems and design your PDFs, and then you come back and say like, this PDF needs more about this or that.
Right.
But I can go and talk and sell.
Yeah.
Like nobody's business.
That's how I am too. Mm-hmm. If I can sit down with somebody, it's a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I also love guilting people into that. I use a lot of psychological tactics.
For sure.
I think it's funny, too. I try to teach the younger millennial girls about that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in them the same way. Like, I always know when somebody has a haircut. Always. I always know if somebody has a haircut.
Interesting.
And I can't tell you how many times I think a client was maybe going to fire me, and I'm like, did you get your haircut? Mostly males. And I swear to God, it's like those little things.
For sure.
What does your tattoo say? Yep. Like,
for me, it's the coffee order.
Oh.
It's the coffee order. I will systematically, like, if we hang out long enough, I'll ask you whether you like coffee or tea. And whichever one you like, I will remember what it is. Like, I know everybody's coffee order, because to just walk in and get somebody a cup of coffee is cool, but to get them their drink, solid.
That's baller. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I know I can think of so many people. It's like I can think of one of the women that I work with. It's a double tall decaf latte. I know, I mean,
that's also a panty dropper. That's just not a business thing.
But see,
that's good.
It's interesting. I always make this comparison, how they relate. Like romance and business are very much so correlated because it's just people.
Yeah.
And guys, like I have students ask me or whatever, like how should I talk to girls? Like how do I do this? And I'm like, listen, two things. One, if you're interested, try to make the person feel like they can be themselves, and they will be looked at any differently for it.
That's sweet.
One. And then two, this is not rocket science. Think about what that person is going through and how you can actually provide something in their life. I give this almost the same advice for business and for relationships because it's like, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
People want people who will give to them. And we live in a culture right now where it's like, wait, can I have your number? Do you want to go out? Will you follow my page? Will you like my thing? Will you buy my tickets? Will you shout me out? Will you do that? It's like, I don't even know you. Mm. Like, why? You're just asking. And like, even the message for me, I'm hypersensitive. Like, even the message for me is like, I'm demanding some of your time and your attention. I want to make it valuable for you. So the way that I sell is like, I want to give you so much that you're asking me to sell you. Like that's my strategy of like, I want to know what you need and I want to give you as much as I can without expectation. So you're either going to buy from me or you're going to purchase some services or you're going to tell everybody that you know that like, I can't believe this experience that I just had with this person. That's the way that I like to do it. It's a long...
But break that down more. Like, so you want to give them enough to purchase. So what do you give them without giving it away,
so
right? I mean, you can't give it away because they don't have your equipment and they don't have your whatever, but...
Well, sometimes I do. Sometimes I'll come and I'll just shoot a video.
Oh.
Yeah, like, we've done that a lot. Like, Kelly and I have we do like this little vlog series where we will literally hit up like 3 or 4 businesses that are local in San Diego and be like, hey, this is what we do. We just want to come by and we want to shoot a little like quick bio documentary thing of you. And we'll drop by and we'll shoot them talking about their business. I'll shoot some B-roll of the place. We'll stitch it together. We use it as content on our platform and we feature them. And we get a soft intro. They automatically know what we're doing and who we are. And there was never like a, hey, do you want to buy my thing? It's just implied, like, those guys were really cool and they gave me something. And if I ever need video, I know somebody. Hmm. It's a long game where it's like, it doesn't work in a month, but it works in a year.
But also, that's super rare, like, that like video works for that.
Yeah.
But other stuff, I'm like, I can't even think how that would even apply. Like, I don't think I would design like an e-newsletter for somebody just because, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that's lucky in a way.
Well,
I'm not saying it's lucky because it's obviously very strategic, but it's like, I don't know that would apply. Like, that's a good one.
We'd have to use like a specific example.
Well, I guess having them on, like, speaking at Hustlecraft, but really wanting them to hire me for content creation. In some ways, it's like, yeah, come speak on my thing and, like, have at it.
Soft client grabs. I'm all about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a soft grab for you.
Yeah.
Because now they know who you are. You treated them right. Mm-hmm. You already established this relationship. You've established, like, they know you. You know them. Mm-hmm. That works so much better.
Yeah.
To me, it just works so much better. Like, I hate cold emails and no's and rejections.
But I do think that, like, I always am conscious of, like, to younger people, that might not be that easy.
Truth.
Right? Like,
absolutely.
Nobody's gonna, at 23, have, like, this dope-ass platform where they can just, like, bring on, like, CEOs and, like, hope that maybe they'll hire them. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Same with video. Like, you've worked your ass off to be able to afford the tools that you have
Truth.
To build that video.
Truth.
So, but I think that, like, you know, there is that weird gap of like not doing shit for free, because I did a lot for free.
Me too.
And I don't know. It's this weird conundrum though that I'm in though, because I just had an experience that I don't really want to talk about, but somebody was like, I can't do that for free. That was interning for free for school credit. And they had just gotten their paperwork mixed up and whatever. It was just annoying. And I thought, well, volunteer. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like, well, then she knows her self-worth. And all of us feminists have worked really hard for her to be able to say, can't.
True.
But also she doesn't, I don't know. It was like a weird thing where it was like, as the boss, I was like, put in your time, bitch. Sorry, that's how I think.
Okay,
and you know, it's like, bitch, put in your time.
Yeah.
Like, shut your mouth and stop making a scene and come and put in your time because you know you're good. You know I like you.
Yeah.
And you will get a job.
Yeah.
But then the other part, she's like, I'm really good at what I do, and you do need me, so pay me. And so it was like this weird thing where it's like, this is like giving away so much, but Kara was literally like, are we rewarding bad behavior? Like, she like was interning for us, and you know, it's a really weird.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, there's so many variables. Like, it depends on the agreement up front and what the expectations were, but...
It was full semester for credit. You take care of your shit on the credit side, and if you can't get credit this semester... And that's another thing, is, like, the schools won't... SDSU, I'm gonna just talk some shit, will not let people get school credit for an internship until their second semester of their senior year.
Wow.
Those kids need to be interning every year that they can at as many internships as they can.
I agree.
I mean, they could go to, like, you know, from the San Diego Zoo's PR to, like, a law firm and realize they love law and they want to go to law school.
I agree.
But you're going to give them one semester in their final 6 months where they're the most stressed, where their parents are putting all the pressure on them to find a job, to go to one internship.
Truth.
I mean...
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know. I mean, college is interesting. There's a lot of different ways we go. I want to be respectful of your time,
yeah,
too. It's 3:22.
Oh, okay.
I'm on. I'm chilling.
I have to go.
Okay. I have to go.
I have to be somewhere at like 4:15.
Okay. How can I help you? How can people help you?
investing in the fact that I am trying to bring more culture to San Diego. And if it means, if it's hard to buy that $100 ticket to Hustlecraft, then helping me find brands that want to have some sponsorship dollars involved with it so that I can lower the ticket price, I would be happy to be able, you know, like right now I'm having to like buy lunch for everyone,
yeah.
You know? And so if some, you know, if somebody knows companies that are like UGG or Visa or, you know, I'm sure we're all kind of coming after the same dollar, but I don't think everybody knows how to utilize that. Like if you, people have those contacts and they don't want to give them away, but they can't use them.
Right.
This is where I would need their help.
Gotcha.
Like, you know, U.S. Bank or Bank of America or San Diego Credit Union.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
If they could just give like $8,000 to the event and be like a premier sponsor and get in front of all these small business owners and like all these people that like want to open their first business accounts as a business, and I could sell any
Do
of
it.
These people into sponsorships. I don't have those connections and the time.
Yeah.
You know, the time to be like, hi, can I talk to the CMO at San Diego Credit Union? Like, here's Hustlecraft and here it's... And it's a very millennial progressive thought that like, we don't wanna go, like there is nothing like this. And I'm selling you something that's like not a networking, it's not like a tech conference with a bunch of dudes, and it's also not like a hoorah female conference where it's like girl power and they get all these amazing female brands to sponsor them. Like mm-hmm. I am black, white, man, woman, gay, straight, equal. But hustlers and business owners and people that will be millionaires one day. So I think either investing in coming and learning and being part of the community or helping me find ways to get like brands to be part of it is what I need help with.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. I'll probably have somebody for you.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for having me.
How do we find you?
I am on Instagram. Alex V. Ott is my IG, my personal IG. Lots of baby photos of my son, Henry. let's see. Sorry, I have too many. The Blank Table is the dinner series. Uh-huh. That's a dope. If you like don't want to go all in on a full day of Hustlecraft, like The Blank Table. I think the things that I have actually there's nothing like. The Blank Table is the .blank.table. Chrome City, California is Chrome City CA, and Hustlecraft is hustle.craft on Instagram. I think visuals are the best.
I agree.
DM me if you don't want to look at my visuals and you want to meet for coffee or something.
Cool.
And I take my coffee. Pizza's my favorite. I don't like these like modern millennial brands like Dark Horse. I know that people love them. I hate bitter coffee.
Yeah.
I like thick, rich, dark coffee, Pete's coffee. And if I could have Pete's coffee with coffee made hazelnut creamer, I could have 12 of them and do nothing else with the rest of my
life. Is there like Pete's coffee? I'm a big fan of the Major Dickinson's. Yeah.
That's what I have at home.
Yeah.
So I have that with my hazelnut creamer.
Yep.
And my boyfriend and I take our coffee exactly the same.
Yep.
And if we're like remotely out, we both have panic attacks. He's like, there's only like one scoop left. Like, we need to go now to the store now.
Uh-huh. Is it like cream with a side of coffee or coffee with a little cream?
Coffee with a little cream.
Okay.
a third.
Got you.
Yeah.
What kind of pizza?
I love Chicago style pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lefties.
Is there one? Is there anything
yeah,
here?
Yeah, Chicago Lefties.
Really?
Chicago style pizza.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm gonna have to hit them up.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay.
There's two locations, one in Mission Hills and one in South North Park.
Dope.
Yeah.
I got you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Boom, so that was the episode. Please go give her a look. I'm gonna put all the information in the show notes. But if you look up Hustlecraft on Instagram, it will surely pop up. I know that they're having an event coming up very soon, depending on when you're listening to this. It may have already happened, but if there's anything that you would like to hear, if there are questions or somebody you'd like me to interview, I probably know somebody in the area or in the field that you are interested in. Please don't hesitate to reach out. Our company Instagram is at stigma.solutions, and my personal is at mattburn_OWO. Yeah. Thank you so much. Hope you have a beautiful day.